ABC Radio Australia.
More than 100 of Australia's cultural and ethnic organisations have signed a joint resolution to back an Indigenous voice to Parliament, and they're calling for their communities to vote yes in the upcoming referendum on the issue. The voice would provide permanent representation and recognition of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples in the Constitution, but the upcoming referendum vote will decide if the Australian body is created. With almost half of Australians having a parent born overseas, the multicultural vote could be decisive, and both the yes and no campaigns are courting it. The voice is an issue that's close to home for Bella Swan, who has Pacific Islander and also Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander heritage. She's a member of the Pacific Communities Council of Far North Queensland and joins us now. Bella, thank you so much for joining us on the line from Fiji, I understand.
Thank you. Yes, I am in Fiji at the moment. Good morning, Bula.
Bula, Bula, Bula Vanaka. So before we go into this voice question, I wanted to touch on your quite unique experience in Australia, because as I mentioned, you have Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander heritage, but you're also Fijian and Tongan and a migrant to Australia. Can you talk about some of your experiences building a home, building your identity when you did move here into Australia in the 70s, I understand?
Yes, my parents moved myself and my eight siblings to Australia in 1972 with hopes of, improving our lives. Australia was the land of opportunity. Coming from Fiji, which was a British colony, or maybe it had achieved independence at the time, it was an adventure. However, our experiences of actually settling in Australia was quite different in terms of experiencing for the first time racism. Mm. So that in some cases determined how we lived our lives. But it was something that we overcame with education, with the guidance of our parents as well. And the support of our certainly the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities of Far North Queensland, of which we have links to.
Oh, well, that's good that you were able to find that space, because I know in the ABC article that came out today about some of your experience, it was you also talked about, you know, finding it difficult to find a space, you know, both within the Pacific Islander community and within the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. Is that right? Was there a bit of a tension there during your experience?
There was some tension, but it was mainly you see, I know it sounds coming from Fiji. There was no, I had no experiences in terms of my colour. Mm. Coming to Australia was the first time that I, you know, heard about being black, being a coon, being a bong, and you know, people making monkey noises at me and my siblings, and that was quite a new experience for us.
And I know. Go ahead, Bella.
Yes, so that was something that we had to overcome, and I think the concept of racism is something, well, you know, it contributed to a lot of our trauma of acculturation. However, it was something that we have been able to work through after 50 years and manage just the effects of that and how it impacted, you know, how it impacted and impacts on all of our lives. Both as Pacific Islanders, and also with the Indigenous communities of this country.
Yes, exactly, Bella. Because those experiences of racism when you're young can really stay with you for so long, isn't it? I mean, you said it happened 50 years ago, but I no doubt believe, you know, I can hear that you still remember those incidences. I mean, considering that, and now we're having, I guess, another debate on the status and the role of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in our politics with the voice to Parliament and this referendum coming about. Have you been thinking about those issues of racism and your experiences as these talks about voice to Parliament come up? What does this debate mean to you?
For me, the voice is embedded, you know, the reason for us to have a voice the Yes campaign to have a voice, I believe, is embedded in the effects of racism. Mm. And, I believe, for Pacific Islanders and also the Indigenous peoples, we have two very different yet similar perspectives with regards to lifestyle experiences in Australia. For Indigenous people, it is much more than yes or no or the legal political debate. It's, it's about fairness, equality versus injustice. It's about hope versus despair. It's about healing, versus hopelessness, freedom versus imprisonment, and, dignity versus slavery. Because in the 1870s, the Pacific Islanders came to Far North Queensland under the blackbirding scheme. Mm. And that wasn't a positive experience either. But, for migrants, there's similarities in with the Indigenous population in terms of our culture, cultural values, beliefs, tradition, because we focus on the collective as opposed to the white nuclear privileged worldview. So I think for migrants, Australia as the is perceived as the land of opportunity, and to be successful in the country, we need to adopt those white privileged values, cultures and beliefs, the accumulation of wealth and resources. And in that acculturation process, I believe a lot of migrants compromise and sacrifice their own values and beliefs, which is not a positive process or a positive way of achieving a positive acculturation into this country. With a voice,
No, that's interesting. So you see the voice as also, I guess, supporting migrant communities as well. Is that right? To allow them to, I guess, have a bit more of a connection to their culture. Is that right, Bella?
Yes, and in my experiences, although we have, and I'm also Australian. Mm-hmm. Australia is a multicultural country. Often the terms of reference are of how we experience multiculturalism, the terms of reference are determined by white privilege.
Mm. And you are now part of these, more than 100 cultural and ethnic organisations here in Australia to sign a joint resolution backing the Indigenous voice to Parliament. Do you think there is this common view amongst the Pacific community? Do they also support this Indigenous voice to Parliament as well?
The majority that I have spoken to, and in my role as a volunteer on the Pacific Communities Council of Far North Queensland, is that they don't know or understand the reason for the voice. Most of our Pacific Islander nations people are shocked that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are not recognised in the supreme law of Australia in terms of the constitution. Because from where we come from, the traditional owners are the true custodians of the land, and the constitution. Say for example in Fiji, the Itauke. Mm. They have a special and unique role in Australia as the traditional owners, as the custodians of this land. They have native title. They have a thing called the Volanikawambula. And when I speak to my Pacific people and say that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples are not recognised in the Australian Constitution, they're quite shocked and quite sad about that.
And you are in Fiji at the moment, Bella. Is there an awareness of what's going through in Australia now with regards to the voice referendum? What are the reactions of people in Fiji where, as you said, there is so much prominence given to Itauke people there?
It's, the very few, like within my own family circles where we've discussed this, it's it's shock and sadness because and it's like they don't understand it. How could that be? Because also the colonization of Fiji by the British was quite different to that of Australia.
Mm. How so?
Well, the British were the ones that set up, you know, that in conjunction with the chiefs of Fiji, they set up the Great Council of Chiefs, acknowledging the role of the traditional roles, the cultural values and beliefs of the Fijian people, and embedded that in the law of Fiji, the native titles, and as I said, the Volini Kawambula, the setup of the different, for want, provinces and states within Fiji. It ultimately recognises the rights of Indigenous people in this country. And I believe the same would be for Samoa and Tonga, the Cook Islands. So the fact that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are not recognised in Australia is quite confusing.
Yes, I mean, it is quite an outlier if you do look at I guess, all the members of PIF, the Pacific Islands Forum. Most of them do have, as you have been outlining, Bella, some sort of representation for Indigenous issues, some sort of body that handles those issues. Even you can see, you know, French territories like New Caledonia have chiefly councils that are there to advise on Indigenous issues. I mean, it is quite an outlier in Australia. But I wonder, Bella, you're there in Fiji at an interesting time where the Great Council of Chiefs has just been reconvened last week. Are there parallels, do you think, with what we're seeing here in Australia and what's happening in Fiji?
You know, I haven't lived here for over 50 years.
Mm.
My understanding is that, and other people are experts on this, I'm not. I'm not in a position to talk about that, but to my understanding growing up here in the first place was that the Great Council of Chiefs was established to recognize specifically the rights of the Indigenous peoples in the parliament, in the government.
Mm. Yes.
And you know, perhaps the similarities are there in terms of the Great Council of Chiefs and having the voice in Parliament for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples to be able to speak. But it's quite different for me in ways, because we believe it is a normal and natural right of Fijians to have the voice in Parliament through the Great Council of Chiefs. There is a lot of opposition in Australia to that.
Yes, indeed. And as you mentioned, Bella, just before we go, you know, you said some people in the Pacific Islander community here in Australia aren't not aware or perhaps don't know the details of the voice referendum. Do you have something you tell them? What's the best way of explaining the referendum to those people who do want to know more?
You know, I believe that community education is, through our different community groups, the Pacific diaspora, would be one of the best vehicles in which to deliver this message, you know, of the positive aspects of the voice to Parliament. There are very significant similarities of the experiences of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Australia with that of people who have migrated to Australia from the Pacific nations.
Mm.
And a lot of that is about, as I said before, the experiencing the trauma of racism and how Pacific Islander people could manage that better, have a voice as well in terms of how they experience life, how they deal with life in a white, like I said, a white privileged society. And I think having that supporting the voice proposal would also see Pacific Islanders benefiting from that, being able to actually talk about how they struggle with the current systems in Australia, having the systems in Australia recognise the collective world view, the collective values and beliefs of Pacific nations. And that also means that I believe that through the churches, similar to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, there's great spirituality amongst the Pacific nations. And Pacific nations have had a long history, a long association with the Indigenous communities way back 70, 80 years through the early Uniting Church Methodist ministries, where there were the programs where the early ministers came and lived amongst the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. I'm aware of in Cape York in the Northern Territory. And it's through those ministries, I believe, that they can, they can talk about the positive aspects of the voice. And, especially for me, it's also about having trained ethno-specific people, talking about, unpacking the trauma of racism. Because, as I'm aware, I'm a social worker by profession, is the increase of Pacific Islander people, in unemployment, in prisons, in youth justice.